America is rapidly graying. Between now and 2030, the number of people in the U.S. over the age of 80 is expected to almost triple. But how long people live raises the question of how well they live. The book, Aging Our Way, follows the everyday lives of 30 elders, ages 85 to 102, living at home and mostly alone to understand how they create and maintain meaningful lives for themselves. Author Mika Lowe explores how elders navigate the practical challenges of living as independently as possible while staying healthy, connected, and comfortable. A conference is being held by the Saratoga Vital Aging Network in the Sociology Department of Skidmore College tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. entitled Vital Aging Our Way. The conference features Mika Lowe, and it's a great pleasure to have her join us in the studio this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
It's my pleasure, Joe. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Give us a sense of what put you in this field in the first place, of being interested in what goes on as we age.
Well, I guess there are two answers to that question. One is that I was fortunate to be very close with my grandparents and great-grandparents and learned a lot from them. Their questions became my questions as they lost their spouses and, moved into aging at home alone. And then asking questions about what creates a meaningful life and a purpose-driven life. I have one remaining grandparent, maternal side, who's one of my best friends. And so that was one inspiration. The other one is that I work 2 hours from home. And so I live in two different communities. And I rent a room from a local elder near Colgate University. And she opened this whole world up to me of essentially widows living in their homes alone, connecting with each other and caring for each other. And that totally inspired me.
How it seems to me, and my father is 85 years old, mm-hmm. lives at home mm-hmm. alone. Ah. So a lot of the questions I'm going to ask you are based on just my experience of what I've lived through and what I know. But it seems to me that if you ask many, I was going to say older people, but even people as they advance an elder age, of what the ideal scenario would be. This is it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 9 out of 10 Americans want to live at home.
Yeah. They don't want to leave what they've had.
That's right.
Now, what I find interesting about your work and what's interesting about the book and even about the conference is that living at home is one thing. That meaningful part mm-hmm. is really the key to this.
Right.
So why is that such a challenge?
Why is that? I think that's a challenge at all stages of life. I mean, I talk with my college students about what is meaningful to you, this vitality question. I think in terms of the oldest old, so your father and my grandfather, we think about old age in terms of care and in terms of disease and in terms of frailty, and we forget to ask questions, continue to ask questions about what constitutes a meaningful life.
Right. And do we forget or do they forget?
I think all of us lose sight of it.
Because you seem like you're so, as a caregiver or as a family member or someone who is in the equation, if you will, mm-hmm. you seem so hell-bent on making sure that you get what they want or as close to it as is possible. Mm-hmm. But then you realize that the person is there, they're alone, and you wonder, well, okay, now how can we augment that and make it so that it is vital and meaningful, mm-hmm. and there is something there that is as close to a good life as we have now.
Uh-huh. That's the big question.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes learning about that individual's life to understand how to tap into their vitality. So, for example, Eddie, who I talk about in the book,
yes.
he was the elevator operator at our state capitol in Albany for 32 years. And he loved that job. It was all about greeting people every morning, the Rockefeller, Cuomo, all the governors. He was, you know, the morning greeter, essentially, at the Capitol.
Always with a smile.
Always with a smile.
And he had this great job because it was that old elevator where you had to pull the rope to close the door. It was like complicated. It wasn't just pressing
buttons.
That's
right. That's right. Yeah. People were feeling vulnerable.
Right.
Yes. And here he is now. He's in his 90s. And somehow he figured out that being with people and greeting people on a regular basis is what he does well and keeps him vital. And so he's there this morning, in fact, at the Jewish Community Center in Albany, right outside the door of the fitness center, greeting people with a smile. No elevator door this time, but right. You know, he jokes with them. He calls all the women Marilyn Monroe, and that's the way he starts his day. And so, you know, that's for him something he did beautifully during his younger years that he's still doing.
Now, so the diagnostic question is, did he come up with that or did someone help him figure that out?
I don't know the answer to that. I think what happened actually was his doctor said, you probably need to work on your circulation.
Right.
And, you know, you should do these maneuvers with your arms in terms of, you know, helicopter wings and sorts of things to move the blood, essentially. So he kind of thought that was funny and fun and made it into part of his shtick.
So the question is, a lot of this is on us as we get older to figure out what we want to do and how we can live
That's
this
right.
vital life.
Yeah.
In you're taking part in this conference, Vital Aging Our Way. And what's the message you hope to get across?
Well, I think one of the messages is we can learn from those who are 85 and older. When they're looking back on their lives, they know more about what it means to live a purpose-driven life than most of us.
Right.
And the lessons that I've learned from them, I want to convey those and have us work on some of those lessons. They're lessons for all of us at all stages of life. You know, maybe we're starting a new chapter of life. Maybe we're facing retirement. Maybe we're graduating from college. You know, whatever the stage of life, these are important lessons, whether it's connecting with people, which as a sociologist, that's a key social capital is one of the most important things.
Right.
But also caring for others, giving back, the importance of humor and touch.
We were talking to a wonderful author earlier this week who wrote a book about a company. It's the Vita Needle Company in Needham, Massachusetts, and they manufacture needles and 50 or so employees. But many of those employees, they look for older workers.
Mm.
Their oldest worker, I believe, being 102, and the average worker being 74. And they and people occasionally get involved and say, oh, you know, you're exploiting the older people and you're doing this. But what she did as an anthropologist was to sit down and to talk to the older people and have them say, well, I love having this feeling of doing something, of being needed, of getting me out of bed in the morning so I have to be somewhere. And if, God forbid, I have to go to a doctor's appointment or I want to go spend time with my grandchildren, I can call up and say that's fine, but I want to have that feeling that I am needed. And do we have enough opportunities for the elder community to feel needed?
That's a very good big picture question. I'm not sure that we do. I think we have a lot of age discrimination. I think we have a lot of ageism. I mean, just that example is a real anomaly. But I am inspired by the activities that the elders that I profile in the book are engaging in. They're out there gardening. They're, at the community center welcoming people. They're volunteering. You know, 36% of 85 and older volunteer. I had one woman who volunteered at a nursing home and now is there at that nursing home. What a great way to prepare for the next stage of your life.
Is, and a lot of this is preparation, isn't it? Because you never know what's going to happen. You never know what curveball is going to come, but that preparation and at least openness to what the possibilities are, I guess, is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you look at the people that you talk to for the book, these 30 people, you wanted to. They all lived at home, and but mostly alone. But there is obviously the health aspect to it, mm-hmm. and so caretaking comes into this, doesn't it?
That's right. And so several of the lessons that I learned from them are about reaching out to family, asking for care, also outsourcing for care. And I should note, again, this is something that we don't just do at 85 or 90. I'm doing it at 38. You know, I depend on a milkman to deliver my milk every morning. I depend on a babysitter for my child. So, you know, people don't think about those who are in late life hiring and firing, but in fact, they are. They're, you know, creating care networks for themselves.
Mm. And what is your thought, and just circling back to something that we were talking about earlier, of the caretakers, the family, their involvement in that? Mm-hmm. Because obviously the person usually wants their independence.
Yes.
You want them to have their independence, and yet you also want their safety and care. And that's a delicate balance.
It sure is.
So how do you find that, do you think?
Well, I talk about this with my college students, that delicate balancing act, as you say, between autonomy and dependence. It's something throughout our lives that we struggle with.
Yeah.
I see it with my 4.5-year-old. I've found through, you know, these 3 years of research following these elders through the challenges and joys of aging, that those who ask for help actually enable their autonomy. It's sort of, you know, it doesn't quite make sense when you think about it, but in fact it does. If you ask for someone to help you, in Ruth's case, chop vegetables, then you can make the meal.
Mm.
And that's something that keeps her life vital, is being able to, you know, prepare a meal for herself every night with fresh vegetables. If you hire someone or ask someone to walk with you because you may be a little unstable, then you get that exercise and you get the social interaction as well. So asking for help and assistance can enable autonomy for most of these individuals. And that's one of the most important lessons that I've learned from these elders.
So being conscious of and identifying your deficiencies so you can fuel your capabilities.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
And be able to do what it is that you want to do.
That's right. For Shana, the gardener, you know, that she lives and wants to die in her garden, literally. You know,
yeah.
She loves gardening. Her family realized that the way to enable that in late life, she's 95, is to raise the beds in her garden so she doesn't have to bend down as much because she was falling when she was weeding. So now she's got these very raised beds. That's in, you know, keying into something that's very important and vital to her. And as you know, you're one of these 80% of family, you know, 80% of care for elders comes from family members.
Mm.
So being able to tap into that and understand what's going to help them to lead a vital life and still feel like they have a purpose, so important.
It's a fascinating book and a wonderful conference that's being held by the Saratoga Vital Aging Network in the Sociology Department of Skidmore College. It happens tomorrow from 9 to 1 on the campus of Skidmore. It's entitled Vital Aging Our Way. You can find out more information by going to Saratoga Vital Living. No, is that right? No, Vital Aging. SaratogaVitalAging.org. Mm-hmm. It looks different when you put all the words together without spaces. SaratogaVitalAging.org for more information. SaratogaVitalAging.org for more information. And of course, Mika Lowe is the author of the book Aging Our Way, which is published by Oxford. Aging Our Way. Mika Lowe, a great pleasure for having you here, sharing your experiences, and have a great time at the conference tomorrow. And best of luck.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.